RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
So, to the Fish and Game versus Environment Southland decision, and this is where Southland Fish and Game, along with Forest and Bird, took court action against Environment Southland's land and water plan, with the subsequent ruling determining that discharges from farming activities, such as animal urine, require a resource consent. Joining us is Jason Herrick, President of Federated Farmers in Southland. Jason, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
Okay, so what does this all mean then?
So the decision that's come out of the Environment Court, out of the Court of Appeal, sorry, because it's been to the Environment Court and then went to the Court of Appeal, has ended up going back to Environment Court. So Environment Southland have the opportunity now to put something else in front of the judge. What that all means is basically back to the drawing board. I mean, it's like kicking the can down the road, right? You could try and throw the evidence at the judge that they've already seen time and time again, but if they're not going to change anything, the outcome's going to be the same. So the only option going forward for the council right now is to put into the plan that every farmer would require resource consent for this discharge. So, you know, that's going to be another costly bureaucratic exercise for no actual gain whatsoever.
Well, there's no way you can stop animals peeing, is there? So there's no way of dealing with it that way. So there's a rock and a hard place, right?
Yeah, no, we are. We're stuck between a rock and a hard place where that's concerned. And Fish and Game Southland have said on numerous occasions that wasn't their intention and that this would happen. And they firmly believe, after a meeting I had with them this morning, that there are other options. And when we asked what those other options are, they kept referring back to the farm plan. Well, the Court of Appeal and the Environment Court weren't happy with that, you know, so they've asked Environment Southland to come up with more things. And yeah, the only way forward is for every farmer to get a consent or the rules and regulation changed in the RMA.
Okay, so what sort of changes could be made in the RMA then? Just to what, to section out what, as a normal farming activity, discharge urine from animals? I mean, the two come together. There's nothing you can do about that. That's freaking nature, man, right? So there you go.
Exactly. And the government can just make a change in the RMA to Section 70, and that would sort that out, right? And that will flow down to all the regions around New Zealand.
Organisations like Fish and Game, Forest and Bird, are they stepping, your opinion on this, are they stepping outside the original kind of scope of why they exist these days, do you think?
I think they're going far and beyond what they need to. You'd almost call them borderline environmental activists in that sense, right? And Fish and Game, where that's concerned, is they collect money off license holders for the right to go fishing and duck shooting, and then use that money, you know, to fight back in courts. Like they are now. And a lot of farmers are fishermen and are hunters, you know, so they're contributing to the cause, and then Fish and Game are using their money to come back and push back against them to make their lives more difficult and harder than what they need to be.
Sorry to be crude, but everything that lives takes a piss.
Correct. Everything does.
No matter where they are. Doesn't matter where you are. There you go.
Exactly, and I don't see Fish and Game applying for a resource consent for the fish to defecate in the waterways, do you? So, you know, that might be their natural habitat and so on, but Fish and Game have a little bit too much power. Not only can they advocate the way they are, like everybody else, but they also have the power to stop things from happening. You know, so for a consent to happen and to gravel extraction out of rivers to do a bit of flood protection or stop rivers from flooding because the gravel buildup's getting too high in places and so forth, to mitigate the bank erosion that's happening, and that's what most of the sediment ends up down in the estuaries from, is from bank erosion. Just the case of shifting a bit of gravel around or harvesting a bit of gravel out of the rivers to put into eroding infrastructure, which just makes sense to me, would actually mitigate that, but they can say no and then it stops, right? So they've just got too much power, and that power needs to be removed.
And there's a purist element, right?
Yeah, there is. They are an organisation that manage and introduce species, remember, just like us as farmers. We manage and introduce species, and why do they have different rules to us?
Is there any information that says, as an example, animal urine, you know, destroys anything? I mean, is there science behind that?
Sorry to sound so ignorant. Be honest that you could go find any science you like to go down the narrative view that you were chasing, right? And find scientists to back that up, and then you'll find scientists that will argue against it as well. You know, everything that pees can create issues, including us, you know, E. coli, Salmonella. Anything can be created out of urine in the right atmosphere or the right conditions. What they're talking about is the water discharge going through the soils and into the drainage and then into the rivers that way. To be honest, it's an anti-farming rhetoric that they've had ongoing since the Dirty Dairying campaign that Fish and Game run in the mid-2000s. So, you know, and that just seems to have carried on here in Southland.
It doesn't seem to be an appreciation that, first of all, food needs to be grown. And livelihoods are at stake, and even a culture is at stake, actually. That doesn't seem to mean too much to some people these days.
No, they have their narrative, they have the ideology that they're chasing. I can't speak for everybody in that sense. Fish and Game Southland seem to be a wee bit more extreme than most other fish and game councils around New Zealand because, you know, they are a statutory body. They're very similar set up to Federated Farmers. In that sense, and some fish and game councils around the country work well with their provinces, and others don't. And to be honest, there's not much trust since I've launched this campaign with Fish and Game. At the moment, I've had a lot of support coming my way from a lot of farmers, and you know, you soon hear a lot of stories what's actually going on out there, and why people are getting upset, and why there's no trust in that particular organisation. You know, what they say and what they do are two totally different things most of the time.
How do you explain that kind of blinkered overstepping mindset, do you think? People get so invested in one particular thing that they kind of can't see the bigger picture?
I think the word that everyone's looking for is entitlement. They feel like they're entitled to it. And, you know, farmers have been very generous over the years in allowing angler access across private property, right? And that's a privilege. Where it's public property, public road, yep, no, that's no problem at all. But over private property, that is a privilege that farmers have allowed access built that relationship up. Over time, but Fish and Game Southland have absolutely dwindled that relationship away, and it actually says it in their licensing that the word entitlement is in the licensing. You know that the fishermen are entitled. You know, and
to go over someone's land.
Well, it got pointed out to me there last week actually that word was used when you get a license, and it tells you what you're entitled to do. You shouldn't be entitled to do anything. You've got the privilege to go and do it, right?
Yeah, and you want to – everyone needs to think about that to maintain it. So I think you've contended the license fees, which fund Fish and Game's actions, are being used for legal battles and environmental advocacy that conflict with many farmers' and hunters' values, and fed farmers claiming these advocacy efforts lead to restrictive and costly regulations such as what we're talking about now. So – they should go back to their original knitting, do you think?
100%. And that's managing the species that they're in charge of, right? And, you know, and I know they're trying to look after the quality of the environment that the fish live in. 100% understand that. But most of the science and stuff that they talk about is just modelling. Like, it's not actual real-life data.
And that's a very good point.
Yep. And that happens all too often, right? And we're seeing too much... too many decisions being made on people's perception and predictions and modelling rather than real life data. I want to see the real life data and the real life science that is leading to the issues that they're saying is there, and I haven't seen it yet.
I can think of two other examples of that: COVID and managed retreat. It's also being modelled on a worst case scenario basis that no other legitimate organisation uses as a baseline, just to heavy the argument, you know.
Yeah, and we're seeing it too often in all of these regulatory decisions is they keep talking about modelling. I'm not interested in predictions and modelling. I'm interested in real life science and real life data that tells us, you know, that there is a major issue there, because some of the science and the data that we're looking at is telling us that the waterways are improving. They're not degrading like they keep talking about. But if you look at the modelling that's done through the regional councils, the modelling consistent from 2014 till now tells us that the waterways are degrading, but yet the real life data is not telling us the same.
So do you think modelling's used then as, to win those sort of arguments?
It's used as a mechanism.
Look with your own eyes and it's not that. So do you think that's been consciously used as a mechanism, like you say?
Absolutely. And they were talking about this morning the science that they're using on managing the waterways and the rivers and around LIDAR and modelling and bits and pieces and, you know, scanning the riverbeds and working out the flow rates that could go down that channel and so on. And I'm like, hang on, I've grown up in this vicinity. I grew up in this river as a kid. And the changes that I've seen in those 40 years is, you know, just massive changes. Yeah. And I pointed some out to them and they still argued the point, you know.
Just ask someone, right? Just ask someone, they'll tell you.
I would rather trust a person who's lived in the province for 70 years, that has lived through a lot of the adverse events, has seen the changes in the river dynamics, rather than listening to a scientist come in from overseas or someone who's flying around with a special machine on a helicopter, right? So, you know, speak to the people who actually know, and they're the ones who live it and breathe it.
At 4,000 an hour to fly around.
Oh, it's phenomenal, the amount of money they're spending on this stuff. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. All right. So I think that you're calling for Fish and Game to lose its advocacy role, and you're going to be raising this at a meeting. How do you think it'll go down?
So, you know, I had a meeting with them and they don't understand why we're calling for that. Well, that just goes and points out the arrogance of the organisation if they don't understand why we're asking for that. I think advocacy is an important role for a lot of people, but to have the powers that they've got under that advocacy umbrella is what I want to see gone. You know, have given them the right to say no to something when other organisations out there, the only power that they have is that they can submit against something and apply a bit of evidence to it and then get a decision. Where these guys, they have the power to say no and it just doesn't happen.
And do you think they might enjoy saying no?
Of course they do. Absolutely, yeah. They do. It goes again with their anti-farming rhetoric that they've been spouting on since the Dirty Dairying campaign, you know, so they quite enjoy it. And when you look at everything that they're doing, to be honest, it's almost like they're targeting the dairy side of this, and the incidental consequences is now all farmers are coming into that umbrella. So, you know, everyone's going to be affected.
Why specifically dairying? Just because of the intensive nature of it?
The intensive nature of it. Days gone by, we've got less cows in the country now than what we used to have, right? And less animals overall. Don't get me started on the tree situation. That's leading down, you know, that path of intensification, and it's not so intense in a lot of areas now. Farmers have identified that. The amount of work that's going on in the rural sector that farmers are doing, and money that they're inputting into infrastructure in their farms to protect waterways, to protect their livelihood, because without the environment, without fresh water, we can't farm. Yeah. Our animals need good quality fresh water to survive. We need good quality fresh water to survive. We're not going to go out there and purposely ruin it. You know, so you give a farmer a problem and they will solve it.
What happens next, do you think?
I'm just going to keep pushing. Keep pushing until those powers are removed from Fish and Game. Because, you know, from a national point of view, I'd have nothing against the national point of view, but the only way we're going to get a change here in Southland is if Fish and Game's powers are removed. All right. And then it filters down to the provinces. And other provinces are going to be affected, but probably not as much because they don't exercise the same powers as what Southland Fish and Game do. I have heard from other provinces where they work really well with the Fish and Game councils there, and because they're actually sticking to their knitting, they're not pushing the boundaries far and beyond what Southland Fish and Game are doing. So that's, to me, it's the only way to solve the problem is to take it out of the national organisation's hands and let it filter down to the provinces, and then we've got a problem solved.
Because you could argue that no one could ever be satisfied, right, until there's zero farming activity. It kind of seems that's the all or nothing that a lot of people who are very exercised about this are kind of going for a utopian sort of world of, I don't know, eat the bugs or whatever they say.
Like I pointed out earlier, that they are borderline environmental activists, and after Fish and Game did their announcement, after we put the media release out to call for the powers and advocacy to be removed, who jumped on board to back up Fish and Game was Greenpeace. You know, so that just speaks volumes that, you know, they are borderline environmental activists, right? Because there's no one more environmental activist than what Greenpeace are.
Yeah.
So, it's exactly, it just paints a real picture there. And Greenpeace have openly come out and said that Southland should not have animals at all.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. Wasn't expecting that.
they would like to see farming abolished in Southland, full stop.
Oh, good luck with that. Okay.
Exactly.
Jason Herrick, President of Federated Farmers in Southland. Thanks for coming on, Jason. We'll follow it.
Thank you very much for having me, Paul.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.